A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about mega airports as cities unto themselves, the kind of hidden services most passengers never see. Haircuts airside at 3 a.m, employee-only medical clinics, informal economies that spring up when thousands of people can't easily leave a secure zone. The question is, what actually exists behind those employees-only doors, and to what extent do genuine micro-societies form inside the international netherworld of a place like JFK or Frankfurt?
There's an image that stuck with me ever since I started digging into this. A baggage handler at Frankfurt, end of a 12-hour shift at 2 a.m, walking not to his car but to an employee salon inside the secure zone, sitting down and getting a haircut before he drives home. That's not a perk. That's a structural necessity. He literally cannot leave the sterile area for a 30-minute appointment without going through security twice, which the airport doesn't want, he doesn't want, and the security line definitely doesn't want.
Ah, the barbarous security protocol. I like it.
That's the organizing logic for this entire hidden world. But before we get into the specifics, let's set the stage. JFK covers about 5,000 acres and employs roughly 35,000 people. That's larger than the residential population of something like Sedona, Arizona. Frankfurt Airport, Fraport, employs over 20,000 people on site. These are small cities by any measure, except they don't have residents, they have shifts.
The key distinction here isn't just size, it's landside versus airside.
Landside is everything before security. The check-in halls, the arrivals waiting areas, the terrible coffee kiosks. Passengers experience most of that. Airside is behind security, the sterile zone, and that's where the real hidden city operates. Employees clock in airside and often don't leave for 8, 10, 12 hours. Sometimes longer if they're pulling doubles.
The core question becomes, when you isolate thousands of people in a secure, 24/7 environment, where exiting isn't a casual option, what services and social structures naturally emerge? And which ones do airport operators actively build, because it's cheaper than the alternative?
That's what makes this different from the usual. Airports are like cities. Observation. The services aren't decorative. They're operational logic made physical. If an employee needs a dental appointment and has to leave the secure zone, that's 45 minutes minimum. Exit through staff screening, walk or shuttle to landside, reverse the whole process coming back. Multiply that across 35,000 people and you're hemorrhaging productivity.
Where do we start? What's actually behind those doors?
Let's start with the most surprising category, personal care. Frankfurt Airport has an employee salon operated directly by Fraport, the airport authority. It's been running since 1998 and serves an average of 50 employees per day. Haircuts, coloring, styling, all airside, all subsidized by the airport.
1998. So this isn't a recent innovation.
Not at all. And that's one of the misconceptions worth busting early. People assume these micro-societies are new, some post-pandemic phenomenon. They've existed since airports went 24/7 in the 1970s. What's changed is the formalization. Airports realized that ad hoc arrangements weren't enough and started building dedicated infrastructure.
Frankfurt Salon, is that the model, or are there others?
Singapore Changi has a staff-only spa. Denver International has an employee gym with showers and locker rooms that's open 24 hours. Incheon in Seoul has an employee fitness center with a swimming pool. Over 1,000 staff members use it every month. And these aren't converted storage rooms. Changi's staff spa is legitimately nice. Massage services, treatment rooms, the whole thing.
The glockenspiel of corporate approachability, but for people who handle baggage.
And the economics make sense when you run the numbers. An employee who can shower and change at the gym airside after a shift doesn't need to go home first before meeting friends. They're more likely to pick up extra shifts. The airport recoups the cost through reduced turnover and better shift coverage.
How does that actually work in practice? Like, if I'm a baggage handler finishing a shift at midnight and I want to use the gym, do I just Is there a booking system?
It varies by airport, but the trend is toward keycard access tied to employee IDs. At Denver, the gym is badge in 24/7, no booking required. The system logs usage, and the airport uses that data to justify the facility's continued funding. At Incheon, the pool requires a reservation because it's popular enough to hit capacity during peak shift change windows. But the broader point is that these facilities are designed for spontaneity. The whole premise falls apart if you have to plan a gym session 3 days in advance around a shift schedule that might change at the last minute.
It's frictionless by design. Walk in, work out, shower, leave. No different from a hotel gym, except your hotel is an airport and you're not sleeping there.
That frictionlessness is the entire operational philosophy. Every extra step, a booking form, a waiting list, a separate security check, undermines the core value proposition, which is, this is faster and easier than leaving.
What about healthcare? If 35,000 people work at JFK, someone's going to have a medical issue every day.
JFK has a medical center airside, staffed 24/7 by nurses and paramedics. It handles about 15,000 employee visits per year. Everything from routine physicals to emergency care, workplace injuries, even chronic condition management. Heathrow has a dedicated occupational health unit. And some Asian hubs go further. Incheon and Singapore both offer dental services airside.
The dental one gets me. There's something deeply strange about the idea of getting a root canal while announcements for a flight to Dubai echo in the background.
Consider the alternative. An employee with a toothache has two choices: suffer through an 8-hour shift or go through the entire exit reentry process for a 45-minute appointment. The airport loses them for potentially 2 hours either way. Either they're distracted and in pain, or they're physically absent. An on-site dental chair solves a genuine operational problem.
It's less we care about your teeth, and more we care about your teeth because we care about baggage handling times.
I mean, it's both, but the operational logic is what funds it. These aren't charities, and that extends to mental health too. A lot of major airports now have employee assistance programs with counselors available airside, in person, not just a phone number to call. Heathrow's program includes walk-in counseling. Schiphol has mental health first responders trained specifically for the airport environment.
I'd imagine the need is real. Shift work, constant noise, security stress, dealing with the public, that's a recipe for burnout.
We'll get to the darker side of these micro-societies later, because it's not all free haircuts and swimming pools. But let's stay on services for now. Education and childcare is where it gets really interesting.
Daycare at an airport. Because of course there is.
Schiphol's daycare center, Kinderop Vong Schiphol, has been operating since 2001. It cares for children of employees from 6 in the morning until 10 at night. That's not a standard daycare schedule. It's built around airport shifts. Frankfurt has something similar. Dubai has multiple childcare facilities airside.
6 a.m. to 10 p.m. That's covering a lot of ground.
Because airport shifts don't align with normal daycare hours. A security screener working a 4 a.m. to noon shift needs to drop their kid off at 3:30. A cleaner working the overnight needs childcare until midnight. Standard daycare doesn't accommodate that, so airports that want to retain employees, especially women, who are disproportionately affected by childcare gaps, build their own.
What does that actually look like, logistically? If I'm a parent starting a shift at 4 a.m., am I bringing a half-asleep toddler through an employee entrance at 3 in the morning?
That's exactly what happens, and the airports have designed for it. Schiphol's daycare has a dedicated entrance with parking specifically for shift workers doing odd-hours drop-offs. The staff are trained to handle children arriving at unconventional times. There's a quiet room with cots where kids can go straight back to sleep if they were woken up for the drive. Frankfurt's facility has something similar. It's a small detail, but it's the kind of thing that makes or breaks the service for the people who actually use it. A daycare that opens at 7 a.m. is useless to someone who clocks in at 5.
The training side.
Many airports run internal academies. Aircraft mechanic training, security screening certification, customer service programs. Frankfurt has a dedicated training center airside where employees can get certifications recognized globally. Singapore Changi's Training Academy is essentially a small university campus embedded in the airport. The logic is straightforward. If you train someone internally, they're more likely to stay, and they're trained to your specific standards.
Like a company town. But the company is an airport.
The company town analogy is actually pretty apt, and we should come back to that. But one more service category, religious and spiritual spaces. Multi-faith prayer rooms are common in passenger areas, but some airports build dedicated spaces for employees. JFK has a chapel airside that's primarily used by staff. Dubai has a mosque. Singapore Changi has a meditation garden that employees use as a quiet space between shifts.
These become community hubs, I'd imagine. Not just places to pray, but places to decompress. Talk to colleagues you don't normally see.
That's exactly what happens, and it leads into the social structures piece. Services are one thing, but where it gets really fascinating is the community that forms around them. This is where the airport becomes a genuine micro-society rather than just a workplace with good amenities.
Let's go there. What does the social world of an airside employee actually look like?
I found a detail that captures it perfectly. At Heathrow Terminal 5, the staff canteen serves over 2,000 meals per day. The menu rotates weekly based on employee feedback, and it reflects the workforce, halal, kosher, vegetarian, you name it. But here's the thing, the canteen has its own social geography, different tables for different airlines. Different shift patterns sit in different sections. There's an unspoken seniority hierarchy about who sits where.
High school cafeteria dynamics, but everyone's wearing high-vis vests.
If you're a new hire and you sit at the wrong table, people notice. It's not hostile, it's just that these communities develop their own norms and rhythms over years. The canteen isn't just a place to eat, it's the town square.
How does that social geography actually get established? Is it something that just accretes over time? Or is there a moment when someone says, "This is the Lufthansa table now"?
It's almost entirely organic. Someone told me about a canteen at Frankfurt where a particular corner table has been the unofficial maintenance crew table for over a decade. Nobody designated it. At some point, a group of mechanics started sitting there regularly, and then it became self-reinforcing. New maintenance hires got brought to the table by their trainers, and the pattern hardened into tradition. When the canteen got renovated a few years ago and the table layout changed, there was apparently genuine consternation among the maintenance staff. They'd lost their territory.
The renovation disrupted an informal property rights system that nobody had ever written down.
Which is exactly how urban neighborhoods work. The corner store that's been there for 30 years, the bench where the same group of retirees sits every morning. These aren't formal arrangements, but they're real, and disrupting them has real social consequences. The airport canteen is a microcosm of that.
What about communication? Every micro-society needs its grapevine.
JFK has employee groups with over 500 members, used for everything from shift swaps to lost and found to organizing birthday parties. Some are airline-specific, some are role-specific, baggage handlers have their own, security screeners have theirs, and some are airport-wide. These groups function as an informal nervous system for the entire operation.
Anyone have eyes on gate C12? Left my lunch there.
That's exactly the kind of thing. But also more serious, security checkpoint 3 is backing up, can anyone cover? Or, there's a medical situation near the food court. The groups fill gaps that formal communication channels can't address quickly enough.
I'd imagine there's an informal economy that runs through those channels too.
That's the underground economy piece, and it's fascinating. Employees swapping shifts is the most common. There are entire informal markets for shift trades, with their own norms about what's fair. But it goes further. At some airports, employees run small businesses airside. There was a baggage handler at one major European hub who sold coffee from a cart he'd set up in a staff break area. Not officially sanctioned, but management looked the other way because he was providing a service nobody else was.
Like an airside black market, but for caffeine.
Employees who cook for their colleagues, charging a few euros for a proper meal rather than whatever the vending machines offer. Informal childcare arrangements between co-workers on different shifts. It's the kind of mutual aid that emerges in any closed community.
The "I'll watch your kid if you cover my Thursday" economy.
And these arrangements are often more reliable than formal systems because they're built on personal relationships and reciprocity. You don't stiff a co-worker you'll see every day for the next 5 years.
I'm curious about the scale of this. Are we talking about a handful of enterprising individuals, or is this a substantial parallel economy?
It's hard to measure precisely because so much of it is off the books by nature, but the shift swap market alone is enormous. At a hub like JFK, there are probably hundreds of shift trades happening every week through informal channels. The coffee cart guy was unusual in that he had a physical setup. Most of the economy is services traded between individuals. Tutoring, language lessons, rides to and from the airport, even small-scale lending. One researcher who embedded with ground crew at a European hub documented an informal credit system where employees would cover small expenses for each other. A meal, a uniform repair, with the understanding that it would be reciprocated in kind, not repaid in cash. It functions almost like a gift economy within the larger cash economy.
There's a whole layer of economic activity that the airport authority doesn't track, doesn't tax, and honestly probably doesn't want to know too much about.
Because it solves problems they'd otherwise have to solve formally. Every shift swap arranged via WhatsApp is a shift the scheduling department doesn't have to scramble to fill. Every informal child care arrangement is a retention problem that doesn't land on HR's desk. The hidden economy isn't parasitic on the formal operation, it's load-bearing.
What about the airport's own efforts to build community? Do they do events, that kind of thing?
JFK has an annual Employee Appreciation Day, food, music, recognition ceremonies. Schiphol runs a staff soccer tournament that's genuinely competitive. Different terminals, field teams, there are rivalries. Frankfurt has employee cultural festivals tied to the diverse backgrounds of the workforce. These events create a distinct airport identity that's separate from any individual airline or employer.
You might work for Lufthansa, or you might work for a cleaning contractor, but you're both Frankfurt Airport people.
That identity can be surprisingly strong. I talked to someone who worked at Schiphol for 15 years, and she described it as, "I don't work for KLM, I work for Schiphol. The airport is my employer, even if my paycheck says different." That's a real phenomenon.
That's fascinating, because it inverts the normal employment relationship. Your paycheck comes from an airline or a contractor, but your loyalty and identity attached to the physical place. It's almost feudal. You belong to the land, not the lord.
That's a weirdly apt analogy, and the airport authorities actively cultivate this because it serves their interests. An employee who identifies with the airport, rather than their specific employer, is more likely to cooperate across organizational boundaries, more likely to help a passenger regardless of which airline they're flying, more likely to treat the whole operation as their responsibility rather than just their narrow job description.
Let's talk about the dark side of this. You mentioned airport fatigue.
Yeah, this is the part that doesn't make it into the glossy airport authority brochures. Employees who work airside for years can develop what researchers call airport fatigue, a kind of institutionalized isolation. You spend 12 hours a day in a climate-controlled, artificially lit, windowless environment. You eat there, you socialize there, you might even get your hair cut and see a doctor there. The boundary between work and life dissolves.
The airport becomes the entire world.
That's disorienting. I read accounts from long-term employees who say they struggle to relate to life outside. The pace feels wrong. The lack of background announcements feels eerie. They find themselves orienting toward airport rhythms even on days off. It's not clinical in most cases, but it's a real adjustment challenge.
Like adopting a feral cat, but in reverse. You're the one who's gone feral.
Actually, not a bad way to put it. And turnover in some roles remains high despite all these amenities. The services help retention, but they don't solve the fundamental challenge of working in a high-stress, enclosed environment. For some people, the micro-society becomes a trap rather than a support system.
The company town problem. The company provides everything, so you never leave the company.
Airports are more totalizing than most company towns because the security boundary is literal and physical. You're not just socially expected to stay, you're logistically constrained. Leaving requires effort, screening, time, so you stay. You get your haircut airside. You eat airside. You socialize airside. After a while, the outside world feels like the foreign country.
There's a fun fact buried in here about circadian rhythms and artificial light. Airport workers are basically living in permanent twilight. What does that actually do to a person over a decade?
It's well documented in the shift work literature. Increased rates of sleep disorders, cardiovascular issues, metabolic disruption. But the airport adds a specific psychological layer. Most shift workers still see the sun. They drive home in daylight. They have windows in their workplace. A significant portion of airside workers don't. The sterile zone in a large hub can be almost entirely interior. Corridors, holding areas, break rooms, all lit by fluorescents. You can go an entire winter shift without experiencing natural light. Arrive in the dark, work under artificial light, leave in the dark.
The services we've been describing, the gym, the salon, the daycare, they're solving a logistical problem, but potentially deepening a psychological one. Every reason to stay outside is also a reason not to go outside.
That's the tension at the heart of all this. The better the hidden city works, the more totalizing it becomes. And airport operators are aware of this. Some of the newer facilities are incorporating natural light, outdoor break areas within the secure zone, green spaces. Singapore's Changi is famous for this on the passenger side, but they've applied the same thinking to employee areas. But retrofitting older airports is expensive and difficult. JFK's Terminal 4 isn't getting a rooftop garden anytime soon.
How does this compare to other closed communities? Cruise ships, military bases, oil rigs?
The structural similarities are striking. All are 24/7 environments with captive populations, shift work, and a mix of formal hierarchy and informal community. But airports differ in one key way: the population isn't fully captive. Employees go home at the end of their shift. Cruise ship crews live aboard for months. Oil rig workers are on for weeks at a time. Airport workers commute in and out daily.
It's a semi-captive population, tethered but not imprisoned.
Which creates a unique dynamic. The community is persistent, but the individuals cycle through. The WhatsApp group has 500 members, but only 300 are active on any given day because of shift patterns. The canteen social hierarchy exists, but it's constantly being renegotiated as people come and go. It's a community in flux, stable structures, rotating membership.
Like a city with a very high churn rate.
That's actually what makes it a better model for understanding modern urban life than a traditional small town. Cities have churn. People move in and out. Communities form and reform. The airport micro-society is a compressed, accelerated version of urban social dynamics.
I want to push on the cruise ship comparison for a second, because I think there's something instructive in the difference. On a cruise ship, the crew lives where they work. Their bunk is on the same vessel as their workstation. The airport worker goes home. Even if home is a staff dormitory adjacent to the airport, it's still a separate physical space. Does that boundary matter?
It matters enormously. The cruise ship crew member experiences total institutionalization. The employer controls not just their work environment, but their living environment, their meals, their social life, their access to the outside world. The airport worker, even one who uses every airside service available, still crosses a threshold at the end of their shift. They still have a life that is at least theoretically separate. That boundary, thin as it might be for some, is psychologically significant. It's the difference between I work in a closed community and I live in one.
The airport is a closed community during working hours, but it releases its population daily. It's a part-time total institution.
Which is an unusual category. Most total institutions, prisons, monasteries, military barracks, keep their populations continuously. The airport is totalizing for 8 to 12 hours, then releases you, then pulls you back in. It's an intermittent immersion.
What does this mean for the future? As airports get more automated, self-check-in, biometric boarding, robot cleaners, does the human micro-society shrink or just transform?
That's the big open question. Automation could reduce headcount, which would shrink the community. But it could also shift the composition. Fewer low-skilled roles, more technicians and specialists. A smaller but more professionalized micro-society.
Or it could just displace the human element to different parts of the operation. The robot cleans the terminal, but someone has to maintain the robot.
That maintenance worker probably needs to be airside, probably works shifts, probably needs the same services. The micro-society evolves rather than disappears. But there's a larger trend worth watching, the Aerotropolis concept.
The airport is the center of a planned city, rather than a city that happens to have an airport.
Places like Dubai World Central, Songdo in South Korea, even developments around Denver International. These are built on the premise that the airport is the economic engine and everything else radiates outward. At that point, the line between airport micro-society and actual city blurs completely. The employee daycare isn't just for airport staff, it's for anyone who lives in the airport city.
The airport stops being a city within a city and becomes just
which is either visionary or dystopian, depending on your perspective. But it's already happening in pieces. Frankfurt has staff dormitories, actual housing for employees on or immediately adjacent to airport property. Schiphol has been experimenting with mixed-use development that integrates airport functions with residential and commercial space.
The logical endpoint is an airport where employees are born, educated, work, and die without ever leaving the sterile zone, which is either a utopian planned community or a Philip K.
I'm going to go with Philip K. Dick, but the airport authorities would prefer integrated urban development.
There's a real question here about who governs that space. If an aerotropolis has tens of thousands of residents who aren't airport employees whose laws apply, the airport authority isn't a municipal government. They're not elected. At what point does an airport become a company town with a democratic deficit?
This is already a live issue in some places. Frankfurt's airport authority, Fraport, has planning and development powers that overlap significantly with municipal functions. Dubai World Central is essentially a special economic zone with its own regulatory framework. The governance question is unresolved because the aerotropolis concept is still new enough that nobody's really tested the limits. But you can see the tensions forming. Who gets to vote on development decisions in an airport city? The Airport Authorities Board.
The hidden city we started with. The salons and clinics and prayer rooms. That's the seed of something much larger and much more complicated.
The seed was planted for purely operational reasons. That's what I find so compelling. Nobody set out to build a new form of human settlement. They just wanted to reduce turnover among baggage handlers. But the logic of keeping people inside the secure zone, once you start following it to its conclusions, leads you to build a city.
To bring this back to the practical, for someone listening who's going to be in an airport next week, what can they actually look for? How do you spot the hidden city?
A few things. Look for doors marked employees only or staff only, those are everywhere. But notice how many there are and where they lead. At a major hub, there might be hundreds of those doors airside, each one a portal to a parallel world. Watch for uniformed workers in unexpected places. If you see a group of baggage handlers eating together at a gate area during off hours, that's the micro-society in action.
The staff buses, too. Most airports have dedicated employee bus routes that passengers never see.
The timing is a tell. If you're on a red eye and you see a sudden influx of people in uniforms at 3 a.m., that's shift change. Watch where they go, how they interact. You'll see the social structures we've been describing, the groups, the hierarchies, the rhythms.
The next time I'm in an airport, I'm going to be looking at the employees-only doors with a lot more curiosity.
The thing to remember is that every one of those doors represents a service or a space that exists because someone did the math and realized it was cheaper to build a barbershop airside than to keep losing employees for 45-minute haircut runs. These aren't perks. They're the visible evidence of operational logic.
Which is a useful lens for thinking about any closed community. What looks like generosity is often just the cheapest way to solve a constraint problem.
The constraint here is the security boundary. That's the invisible force that shapes everything. The salon, the clinic, the daycare, the chapel. They all exist because crossing that boundary is expensive in time and logistics. Remove the security line and half these services evaporate overnight.
The hidden city is really just the security line made visible. The TSA as city planner.
The TSA as accidental urbanist. There's a dissertation in that.
What's the most surprising thing you found in all this research?
Honestly, it's the longevity. Frankfurt's employee salon has been running since 1998, Schiphol's daycare since 2001. These aren't experiments. They're institutionalized, mature services that have been quietly operating for decades while passengers walked past completely unaware. The hidden city isn't new. It's just hidden.
Getting more elaborate. You mentioned some airports are experimenting with schools for employees' children.
Frankfurt has explored it. Dubai is further along. They have educational facilities integrated into the airport city development. The logic is the same as daycare, but extended. If you want to retain skilled employees, technicians, engineers, managers, you need to accommodate their entire family's needs, not just their shift schedule.
Build me a chair nobody notices they're sitting in, but for an entire life.
The best airport services are the ones that make the airport disappear as an obstacle to normal life. The haircut that happens without anyone thinking about it. The doctor's appointment that fits into a break. the child who's cared for during a parent's shift. The goal is to make the security boundary irrelevant to daily existence.
That's the paradox. The more successful the hidden city is, the more invisible it becomes. The employee who gets their hair cut airside doesn't think about how strange that is. It's just Tuesday.
Which is how all infrastructure works, really. You only notice it when it fails.
What's the one thing you want listeners to take away from this?
That the visible airport, the gates, the shops, the security lines, is maybe 20% of what's actually there. The real scale of the operation, the real community, is behind those doors. And it's not just a workplace. It's a genuine society with its own norms, its own economy, its own social geography. The airport is a city that most people pass through without ever seeing.
The next time you're annoyed about a delayed flight, remember that the person at the gate might have been at work for 10 hours, ate lunch in a staff canteen you'll never see, got a haircut during their break, and coordinated childcare through a WhatsApp group with 400 other airport employees. There's an entire world operating in parallel to your travel experience.
That's the thing. Passengers experience the airport as a transaction. Employees experience it as a place. And those are fundamentally different relationships to the same physical space.
So for airport operators, the takeaway is clear. Investing in employee services isn't charity. It's operational strategy. Every service that keeps an employee airside saves the airport money and lost productivity and turnover.
For passengers, the takeaway is to look closer. The hidden city is hiding in plain sight.
For the rest of us, it's a reminder that some of the most interesting social experiments aren't happening in planned communities or intentional living arrangements. They're happening in the sterile zones of international airports, quietly, behind doors marked employees only.
The airport as accidental laboratory for 21st century urbanism. I'd read that paper.
You probably already have.
I probably have.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1950s, Greenland imported more cinnamon per capita than any other country, roughly 4.7 kilograms per person annually, driven by a traditional preservation method for seal meat that required heavy spicing.
Right.
I have so many questions about Greenlandic seal meat preparation that I'm not going to ask. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, and to the friendly AI down the road at Anthropic. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. Find us at My Word Prompts. See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.